Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and I can tell you that Blaine Wright is going to join us in a little bit, and we'll really look forward to that. Talk about another twist of fate and expectation, and so we'll find out what Blaine's thoughts are, and we can look forward to when the Scat Daddy son gets his dirt try. And there's a few of these. I want to get Jen Patterson on too. Some of the people from last weekend's successes that we didn't have time for. So looking forward to that. And I know that when John White, Casey's got to call John back and get a better connection. But I know when John joins us, he'll gush about Blaine Wright. And, it always seems every year, whether it doesn't have to be Derby horses. It can be, any prominent division or just really anything. And that's why I was kind of feeling bad for the Reeds and Maximus Mischief. Because you only get a couple of opportunities. I mean, if you're a certain size outfit, and if you've been around, particularly if you've been around for a while, getting a shot at the highest levels, that's what you're in business for, is to have a good horse show up on your doorstep. And it's not easy. It's not easy to. You can't just conjure them up all the time. John White, standing by, joins us now. We didn't get a chance to talk to John. We might not have talked to you in 2 weeks.
That's correct. Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah, we missed you. In Vegas. We had the hiccup coming out of Vegas, and then last week had really a full docket while being live in New Orleans. So let's catch up on everything. What have you been doing the last 19 days?
Well, one thing I've been doing is, and interestingly, I don't want to stray off the horse racing myself, but I can't help it today because I'm expecting my college basketball team that I follow from my hometown to move back into the number one spot in the polls, and that's Gonzaga. So I've certainly been entertained and interested in that. But you mentioned that you'll be having Blaine Wright on, and I certainly, his father was one of my favorite jockeys back in the day in the Pacific Northwest, Richard Wright, a very successful rider at Playfair in my hometown, Portland Meadows, and also at Long Acres. In fact, Richard Wright was on Kid Cabin, who was a really nice horse. He was a horse by Crazy Kid. Crazy Kid had held the world record for 6 furlongs and was a pretty good sire. And this Kid Cabin was a maiden special weight winner at Del Mar and had a very good campaign at Long Acres in 1970, and he ran a big race in the Governor's Handicap that year, which was the biggest sprint stakes race of the Long Acres season, and took the lead from the heavily favored Fleet Fair in the final furlong, but then got run down by my favorite horse, Turbulator, in the final stride. The Turbulator sliced 2/5 of a second off the world record for 6.5 furlongs that day. Just years later, I ran into Richard Wright at Emerald Downs in the racing office when I was up to do a Fox Northwest broadcast. And we got to chatting, and I said, you know, I've never asked you about that race, Richard. What do you remember about that race on Kid Cabin? He said, man, my horse ran so good that day. And he says, when I took the lead, I thought I was going to win for sure. And he says, all of a sudden, that turbulator just went by me. I couldn't believe it. And he reminded me of how Pinkai had told me the way he couldn't believe Sham went by him in the Kentucky Derby when he was turning for home. Pinkai thought he was a cinch because he had just gone by Shecky Green without even really asking Sham yet. And Pinkai told me, he says, I was sure I was going to win my first Derby. And he says, but all of a sudden, here's this Turcotte going by me, and he says, he's just hand-riding that horse. I can't believe it. And when you consider that Sham ran under 2 minutes in that race and got beat, I mean, it still has to rank as one of the great performances and defeat, not just in Kentucky Derby history, but in racing history. And it also reminds me, I once asked Alex Elise, I said, what was it like on Bertrando turning for home in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Churchill Downs? And he says, it's very similar to these comments of Richard Wright on Kid Cabin and Lafitte Pinkai on Sham. He says, I thought I was a cinch. He says, I hadn't even asked Bertrando yet. And all of a sudden, he says, Patrick Valenzuela goes by me out in the middle of the racetrack, and he went by me so fast that I knew he was there, and before I could even realize he was there, he was gone. And, of course, that was Arazi and his electrifying victory. So, but Richard Wright, I mean, he not only was a very successful jockey in the Northwest, but he turned out to be a very successful trainer. And certainly he's proud of his son, Blaine Wright, who has also turned out to be a very successful trainer. And this another twist of fate is a very intriguing horse here. I know people are saying, well, yeah, he's won three in a row on synthetic, and that's true. But, you know, I remember when he made his debut last November at Santa Anita, and, you know, that was a race in which it was a pretty tough maiden special weight sprint in Santa Anita, and he'd had a pretty good work tab going into that race, at least on dirt. And, yeah, he didn't run that well that day at all. He finished ninth, but, you know, that was his first race. It was a sprint, and so I don't think that is really indicative of what we might see from another twist of fate on dirt now. I think, you know, he's certainly blossomed into a very good colt, and the way he kicked away from that field in the El Camino Real Derby, and yeah, that wasn't the strongest Derby field. It certainly, we've got the Fountain of Youth coming up, and the San Felipe are going to be the two biggies, because both of those races are shaping up to be extremely strong. But this another twist of fate is just, he's an intriguing horse. You know, to get a 94 buyer, and especially on synthetic, because, you know, I don't think it's as easy to get a 94 buyer personally on the synthetic as it is on the dirt. Those synthetic buyers tend to be blunted a tad. And, you know, he really took his game up to another level, but it was visually impressive to me. I mean, he looked like a racehorse coming down that final furlong. So I think no matter, you know, what the future holds for him, I think he's a darn nice colt, and he's in very capable hands with Blaine Wright, that is for sure. So it'll be interesting for me to see if they've decided yet what they're going to do. To me, I would think a real ideal spot might be the Sunland Derby for him. That would just be my thinking, because I wouldn't necessarily want to come down here into Bob Baffert, Jerry Hollendorfer territory at Santa Anita. And I don't think there's really any reason to have to go to Oaklawn. I mean, they could, but that Sunland Derby is sitting there with that $800,000 purse and the Derby points for that race. It would just seem to me to be a very good spot. So I'll be very interested to see if they have made a decision. And if I were to make the decision, that's the race that would really be at the top of my list to go back to the dirt with another twist of fate.
Well, the timing would be quite good, because yes, you're looking at March 24th, and you're coming off of, what, February last Saturday was the 16th. So you're looking at 12 days, looking at exactly 6 weeks, really. So 5.5 plus weeks, that'd be perfect, I would imagine.
Yeah, so the timing is good. I think, you know, it's not going to be as strong as some of these other Kentucky Derby races, like I say, like the Fountain of Youth is shaping up, and of course the Florida Derby will be salty down the line, and you know the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby are going to be very tough, I would imagine, with $1 million purses, and like I say, you come down here to Santa Anita, and I mean you're facing the A team from two of the most powerful barns that we have here in the Bob Baffert barn and the Jerry Hollandorfer barn, so. To me, that just seems to make sense. So we'll see what they decide to do. But whatever they decide to do, he's just, you know, an interesting colt because, you know, Kingley's not exactly chopped liver. I mean, I know he's way down the list on Bob Baffert's three-year-old ranks. But by the same token, to just bury that horse like he did, and, I mean, you can only defeat the horses that you're running against. And I really did like the way he did it quite a bit. So he was very visually impressive to me. And I'm just excited for Blaine because it sure is neat when we can get somebody like that on the Kentucky Derby trail. That's
and,
for sure.
Yeah, agreed. And that's part of the appeal. And we do get, not only do we get it, we've had a lot of successful, kind of smaller names and you know lower profile successes on that front, and you know whether it's a Barkley Tag or you know a John Service, etc. It's
Artie Sherman,
exactly. I mean they're perfect. It's funny how the Derby can be an equalizer on that front. John, you know, a few of the performances from the last, really the last two weekends to touch on, and you know, given that we were on hand at both the NHC and at Fairgrounds last week, you know, some of the things that went on, including Marley's Freedom's performance in the Santa Monica. Now she's looking to get around two turns, it looks like, for the Beholder Mile as a target. Baffert heading in that direction. You know, we also anxious really to you know, see the follow-ups to Platinum Warrior, True Valor, and even Sparkyville. Sparkyville came up earlier this morning when mentioning that Desmond is going to run back on fairly short timing into that allowance. Unless Baffert, is it possible that you know, Baffert entered Desmond to help make that race go? I suppose that's a possibility, you know, with Roadster on the comeback trail.
Yeah, that thought occurred to me as well. So it wouldn't be the shock of the century if we saw Desmond coming out. On the other hand, it seems to me that this is a pretty good spot for Desmond to, you know, go to two turns for the first time in his career. So this race to me is similar to the mile race that Justify ran in his second career start, as far as the timing is somewhat similar in the distance and the conditions of the race. I mean, that was the race that Justify followed up that sensational maiden debut win and came back and won. And that was a race that only drew five, and that was important because they needed the five to make the race go.
That's right.
And that was one of the – there were so many things that happened in Justify's – you know, things that could have, you know, zigzagged the wrong way for him, and that's one of them because that would have thrown all the timing off and everything. And that was the plan that Baffert had in mind after the maiden win when he was talking to Mike Willman in the winner's circle, and Willman asked the very good question – is it too late for the Kentucky Derby for Justify with the February 18th win? And Baffert says no, and he says, I've got a plan. And the plan was the condition book had already just come out, and Baffert was aware of that allowance optional claiming race that was there for Justify. And, of course, then there was kind of the red herring of the Sunland Derby. They threw that out there, but that was smart, because the reasoning behind that was to try to help make the allowance race go. So, you know, I would, at this point, I mean, I would think he would be kind of inclined to run Desmond here, because, again, from a timing standpoint, it just seems like this is a good place. You know, it could be a good launching spot here for Desmond and or maybe Roadster, but I think especially Desmond could maybe be a Sunland Derby-type horse. So we'll see. But, boy, that sure was interesting to see this race pop up, because Nolo Contesto is so highly regarded, and I quite personally am very high on Omaha Beach, who came off of that tough loss to Nolo Contesto when they were way ahead of everybody else in the maiden race at a mile. And Omaha Beach came back on that sloppy track.
That's right.
And just looked, boy, I'm telling you, that was one of the more visually impressive races I've seen this year, for sure. And he got a 90 buyer. And, I mean, I think Mandela's got a really good colt there for Rick Porter. I know someone else who's very high on Omaha Beach, and it's someone I have a lot of respect for, and that is Steve Askin. And, you know, the fact that Steve feels that the pedigree is there and so forth, but boy, I know Omaha Beach, he kind of got stuck with the second-itis label, and understandably so, because he was having trouble exiting the maiden ranks with the string of seconds. But you talk about breaking through, you know, big time, and he sure did. I mean, to open up 10 in a 7-furlong race, and again, with all these sloppy and wet tracks we've had, it makes it tougher to evaluate form, because you're saying, well, was it the wet track? And that's like the big question we're going to have this week in the Fountain of Youth. That's the question with Hidden Scroll, is a lot of people, they want to see him do it on dry land, and that's understandable, because, you know, maybe he freaked because of the sloppy track in his debut, and maybe Omaha Beach freaked because of the sloppy track in his maiden win. But I sure love the way Hidden Scroll looked, and I love the way Omaha Beach looked, and I know how high they are on this Nolo Contesto over there at that John Sadler barn. And, you know, they don't just get high on anybody. I mean, we're talking about an outfit there that just had a horse who was almost Horse of the Year last year, and Accelerate. And when they're high on a horse, even like Catalina Cruiser or whatever you have from that Sadler barn, when they really like a horse, it turns out to be generally a very good horse. And so this Nolo Contesto, son of Pioneer of the Nile, and I don't blame them for sitting out of the San Felipe, because, you know, I mean, when you get a sloppy track or a wet track, you know, sometimes trainers, they're thinking, you know what, there'll be another day and we don't have to go here. It's not like when you get to the Kentucky Derby and you get a sloppy track, because you can't skip the Kentucky Derby and wait for another Kentucky Derby. You have to go on the sloppy track in the Kentucky Derby if you want to run in the Kentucky Derby. So, but when it's the San Felipe Stakes, that's a situation where it's early enough in the year and you can say, you know what, we'll wait for another day. And
well,
that other day looks like it's going to be Friday.
There is the different options that are out there. A couple of notes to include here. You know, Roadster is intriguing to me a little bit as maybe down the road. that dam. I don't know if he's a dirt horse. Would be the first thing that's got to be established, because, you know, he's a half to ascend. Who won a Manhattan going back a few years, and even the first foal out of Ghost Dancing was a nice turf type, Morotap, for those that remember Morotap. So Roadster's worth watching. The Nolo Contesto presence in this, and we'll see about Desmond going. I can also use this these two Baffert runners to provide a bit of an update for those that are looking for where Magic on Tap might be. It came up on our website on Derby Trail, and I reached out to Mrs. Lyons, actually, because the last we had heard, he was on the farm, and he's still on the farm, but he's getting ready fairly soon to come back. He had a little bit of some bone bruising, but they also Dr. Bramlage took a cyst, a small cyst, out of him as well. And so, you know, when we hear about, you know, when people hear about, you know, going, you know, going wherever, to whether to Kentucky or wherever they might be going for evaluation, and when there's a sense that something's amiss, you know, there here's an example. You know, not only was there a bone bruise, but he had a little cyst that needed to come out, and he's close to going back to Baffert to, you know, pick up the ball. So those of you that have been watching for Magic on Tap, the one that we haven't heard anything about is the New York bred Tale of the City. Has sort of that one has been a little bit more of a mystery of his
Tale
status.
Of the Union?
Tale of the Union, not Tale of the City.
Yeah.
Tale of the Union, exactly. But I wanted to provide that Magic on Tap update. But this will be a lot of fun, John. In addition, let's also talk about your impressions of Galilean. We're also waiting for Instagram's whether he's officially going to participate in the San Felipe. But I could not reach out to Jerry Hollendorfer this morning. I wouldn't want to make him talk about Battle of Midway, and it would be hard, you know, not to discuss it. But we're watching for Instagram. But what's your Galilean take coming out of the Cal Cup performance?
I think there's huge upside there. I know they like him a lot at that Hollendorfer barn again and again. This is a barn that when they really like somebody, I mean, you know, it's difficult to articulate, but what I mean by that is there's some barns that they get high on horses and the horses don't pan out all the time. And so their credibility with me is when they start saying, oh, we really love this horse, or I find out through the grapevine, you know, that they're high on the horse or whatever. But there's certain barns that when they get high on somebody, I mean, or they really like somebody, I mean, they're not always right either, but they're right way more often than they're wrong. And I know that they've liked this colt all along. He's been well managed. And, you know, my main concern with him is, you know, the fact he hasn't run a buyer speed figure yet out of the 80s. But, you know, he's like this California Cup Derby. He had those rivals over a barrel, and it was just more or less a paid workout. And, so, I mean, I don't want to hold that against him too much at this point either. So I think there's just a lot of upside. I think he's very talented, and we're going to find out, you know, as he goes down the line. I did feel like him enough to put him into my top 10 for this past week. So, I mean, and, you know, it's not that easy to crack the top 10 right now. There's a lot of good horses out there. So just to get into the top 10 is pretty good. And, in fact, he worked this morning. I've been monitoring these workouts at Equibase, and Galilean worked a half mile in a crisp 47 and change, 47.40 this morning. Also already listed at Equibase for this morning is Improbable, worked 6 furlongs and 112 flat. So a very sharp workout there for Improbable. Desmond also worked this morning. We were talking about Desmond in this race on Friday. And so he worked this morning, 48 and change, 48.80. And while I was also looking up workouts, I did check on another Twist of Fate. I thought he had worked on the dirt somewhere along the line, but he has not. So that is something. I thought he had worked well on dirt, but that I was mistaken on that. So, but still, like I say, I think... you know, I'm going to be surprised if the dirt that proves to be a stumbling block for another Twist of Fate, personally. I mean, so we'll see on that. But Galilean, I like a lot. I mean, I think he's another of the many good three-year-olds that we have right now. Like I say, I like Omaha Beach a lot. Nolo Contesto, I think's good. But, I mean, you've got the biggies. I mean, you've got Game Winner and Improbable, who are a 1-2 on almost all Kentucky Derby lists. War of Wills, the one that tends to maybe slip into there at number one or two if it's not Game Winner or Improbable. And I like War of Will a lot, you know, too. I mean, Mark Cassie's another one that I go back to. Wonder Godot and, or Godot, or you say it the best. How do you say
Godot.
It? Yeah,
Godot.
You, You say it the best. So
that's 8 years of Hebrew school coming in handy.
Well, see, and I'm lacking on that front. So, I remember Cassie on your show. I mean, she'd at the start of her career, he was saying what a top filly she was and everything. I mean, she darn near won the Kentucky Oaks, and she almost won the Canadian Triple Crown. And, you know, I mean, she's a top filly. I mean, so there again, when Mark, and the way he talks about this War Will, and I mean, he just keeps calling him a superstar, based on his record on dirt so far, he certainly could be. I mean, he certainly could be a superstar on dirt, and it's not even like his turf form was all that bad. He ran a really good race in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf as a maiden, and that tells you what Gary Barber and Mr. Cassie thought of War Will when they kept running a maiden in graded stakes races like they were. So, because they're not ding-dongs. I mean, Gary Barber, to me, is one of the sharpest owners we have in this game today. And when I'm making morning lines at Santa Anita and I see that guy's name there as an owner, I mean, I immediately take a second look at a horse always, because he's just too sharp. And these guys know what they're doing, and they know where to run their horses. And so I take that into full account whenever I'm making morning lines, because of the respect I have for Gary Barber. And I certainly have a lot of respect for Mark Cassie. I mean, here he's back on the Hall of Fame ballot for the third straight year in the United States. He's already in the Canadian Hall of Fame. But Mark Cassie, one of the nine finalists this year, and I certainly hope Craig Perrett will certainly get in this year.
Yeah, we're hoping so.
So, and the fact that he's the only jockey, but you know, they change the rules so often and the guidelines on and the how you get into the Hall of Fame all the time. And last year, only Heavenly Prize was the only one out of 10 that received enough support to get in, which was really surprising, because you only needed 50.1% of the vote from the voting block to get in. And I mean, I would have lost my shirt on an over and under. I mean, I would have thought at least five would have received enough support last year. So, I mean, you're not the great thing is for many years, the great thing now is, as Jay Privman has articulated, it's an up and down vote, which is how it should be. It shouldn't matter who you're on the ballot with each year. The guy that really just killed Mel Studi, and whether, you know, there are people that think Mel Studi should be in the Hall of Fame, other people think he shouldn't, and that's fair. But the guidelines just were, you know, really a killer to him, because back then, not only back when he was on the ballot all the time, he was practically on it every year for a decade. And at that time, only one jockey, one trainer, one female horse, and one male horse could get in,
right,
which was so ridiculous.
That practice was
well, thank goodness
just
they changed
idiotic.
That, because imagine when Rachel Alexandra and Zenyatta became eligible the first year with the stupid guidelines, only one of those two would have got in. So at least they changed that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the fact that, and then it was just they would limit it to the top four getters was the other one that they, after they changed that, you like if there were 10 finalists, only four of the finalists could get in. Even if you got like 80% of the vote, if you were number five with 80%, you wouldn't get in. So they have made good changes. The fact that now multiple finalists can get in each category, that's good. And the fact that you only need 50.1% to get in, that's good. So I really hope Craig Perrett, I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's been some ridiculous log jams. The sprinter stack up, and they've done, there was a litany of distaffers that were backing up. It's fixed. John, I got to move. I've got Blaine Wright, and then Frank Angst is going to join us as well from Bloodhorse, and Mike Maloney tomorrow about this outlandish tax deduction issue in Kentucky that has people shaking their heads. Back after this, Blaine Wright joins us, and we'll talk about Twist of Fate and big potential going forward. Last half hour on this Monday at the races, back after this.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't understand the people of the day. See each other down, or live for hand in way. This has been going on for years and years. Humanity's a class lord on his first year. Your blood's red.
Races. 25 minutes to noon here in the east, and you want to talk about a wrinkle. How about a wrinkle in the Derby chase and the road to the classics? Because another twist of fate has everybody intrigued, and they've also got a lot of people excited for Blaine Wright. You just heard John White talk about Blaine and his father as exploits as a rider, and happy to get Blaine Wright back on the show. I think the last time we spoke probably was Alert Bay, related. Blaine, congratulations on this Scat Daddy colt. This is really exciting.
You know, we're certainly right now we're still enjoying that win, and we're cautiously approaching our next race, and you know, it's all new to us. So right now we're just we're gleaming.
Well, and you should be. You know, this was a horse that after that debut with Santa Anita, you brought him up to Golden Gate. Bring us back to, you know, the start with him, and you know what the impression was, because we'll talk about the dirt scenario, you know, in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the first reaction was like, oh, boy, you know, did I do the wrong thing here? And then as I watched him cool out of the race, you know, you just take a deep breath and you say, okay, there's a race to draw a line through. You didn't do the right thing on the horse's side. And I think that, you know, it was more human error than horse error. Going back, looking at things, we done a lot of new things for that horse first time out. Shipped from Golden Gate to Santa Anita, 7 to 8 hour trip. Handled that perfect. Trained good 3-4 days going over into the dirt. Schooled in the paddock good. Acted well on race day. Went out there, you know, the horse broke sharp. He sent right away with the leaders. Obviously, you know, in my opinion, he's laying 4th, 5th, 6th right there in a group of horses. And when sprinters kick on, horses that are stayers or routers per se, they don't go with him. And, you know, that's where I think things went wrong, is he just like was like, whoa, you know, he got real green. Because you got to realize we don't get kickback at Golden Gate like they do on dirt surfaces. So I think it startled him quite a bit and made him confused, and he hadn't been hit. You know, it's more of a spray type of thing. So that being said, you know, Juan switched him out wide, bellied down on him, got after him a bit, and the horse, he made up some ground. He had every right to just pack up and run dead last and have it be a terrible race, but really his gallop out was nice. And, you know, he kind of come back wide-eyed and startled like a first-time starter does. Obviously, a horse like him, he's pretty much outworked everybody in my barn, so he's never been behind like that. You know what? Took a deep breath, said, all right, back to square one. Here we go. No more sprinting. That was my call. That was my error. A horse was supposed to route a week or a week and a half before that on the turf, and I got some separation in a hoof wall. I missed 5 days of training. I missed a workout, and ultimately I sided with that race because we needed to start racing the horse. And, you know, hey, being where you run not real good, Mr. Redicop said, hey, just go ahead and run him at Golden Gate. You know, we'll, because they were going on to Del Mar. That was like the last week of racing it at maybe it wasn't Del Mar. It could have been Los Alamitos. So Peter just said, hey, might as well just leave him at Golden Gate now and race him there. And so I told Peter, you know what? We still got a superstar, Peter. I'm 100% confident in it. And just wait till next time. I'll stretch him out, going a mile 16th, and we won't have to deal with that. And since that point, it's been, you know, lights out as far as his training and racing has gone. So I couldn't be happier watching a horse improve with every start.
Well, and that's exactly the way it looks. And you know, I suppose that, you know, considering that he was an OBS purchase and that's a synthetic strip that, you know, he breezed over, and, you know, don't know the much of the backstory yet going into the sale, but he was obviously cut out, you know, to be a nice horse. He was a $360,000 purchase. He's out of a First Defense mare that had just some what I think a one previous foal, and so, you know, it's a bit of a mystery horse to some degree. And you take him down and put him on dirt and so forth. It is a lot to ask. You come out of the maiden win in December. You bring him back 4 weeks later for the allowance win. Talk about the thoughts going into last weekend and the El Camino Real.
I think for me personally, I was more nervous because I thought that horse had that kind of race in him. I felt day one, you know, I guess what I'll tell you is my dad's 80 years old. And since that horse stepped off the van coming out of OBS, I told my dad, I was like, Pop, you know, you rode a hell of a lot of good horses in your time and trained quite a few good ones. And I've had a few good ones. I said, I've never seen this with a horse like this. And I said, someday I'm going to bring you down to watch him run. And I said, you're going to be in awe when you see him. I mean, you know, for guys like myself at Emerald Downs home base, Golden Gates, my year-round deal, I run some horses at Hastings, an occasional horse I get to take to Santa Anita. You don't get two-year-olds that are 17 hands and 1,150 pounds. And then they, you know, they just start out working everybody in the barn. You know, I never did work him with the two-year-old just because he was that much better. He dominated the three-year-olds and dominated my four-year-olds. And, I mean, these are first condition, second condition allowance horses at Golden Gate. So, you know, going into this race, I was more nervous that he was going to run the way he did versus running a bad race, because I never thought he'd run bad myself. I was just like, man, this right now he's telling me all systems go. And I was more nervous just because I wanted him to run that race, you know, for everybody associated with us, because, you know, you put that much money into him, and you know, they kept asking me, are we going to be able to go on with him? And I kept telling them, yes, I believe so. But until they go out there and they actually prove it, you know, I had nervous energy all day. So I was quite relieving to see him to do that. And to me, it wasn't a surprise. It was more of a relief.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, you should fold in Juan Hernandez, too, who's been on him all the starts. And, Juan's got plenty of experience in terms of being on, you know, on nice horses. What's his portion of this? Is he on him in the mornings when it comes to the timed workouts? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Juan's been on him. I think he probably didn't get on him his first two workouts. Let my gallop boy work him. And then, you know, once I saw the way he was breezing, I was like, okay, we can put a rider on him. Because a lot of times, you know, with trainers, we don't put riders on them for quite some time because, one, they have a tendency to want to test drive the horses too soon. And with Golden Gate's track, you know, your times aren't near as fast as they are on dirt. So I don't want my babies working that fast. It's all about the last quarter mile on that racetrack. So, you know, you're building stamina there. But at the same time, yeah, we've been quite high on him all along. Juan, you know, terrific kid. He's coming along, you know, he's rode quite a few good stake races for me and you know, felt real confident staying with him to take him to Santa Anita. At the same time, you know, he's going to ride him in his next race and we'll see how things develop, you know, and just go from there. It's a situation where we're all kind of excited. We're all kind of new at this, so... you know, we learned a bit about him, and now we feel like we're on top of our game, and it's time to move forward.
Well, talking about going forward, let's also fold in Mr. Redekop in this as well, because, of course, mm-hmm. Alert Bay, I referenced Alert Bay and the conversations we had when he was winning big races, and it really nice for a guy like Peter Redekop to have a horse like this that's going to, you know, be showcased in the three-year-old lead-ups.
Yeah, I mean, Peter, he puts so much into the game, and he's a guy that every year, you know, you get two or three horses worth quality into your barn, and he never steps in and tells you he wants to do this, he wants to do that. He allows his trainers to train his horses. Obviously, every owner expects results. But, you know, for a guy that's racing at four racetracks on the West Coast, he certainly puts a lot into the game. So you love to see someone like him get rewarded with a good horse. You know, he's got stakes horses in Hastings, in Seattle, at Golden Gate, and hopefully, you know, down at Southern California. So it was real nice to have him come down for the race, and he doesn't get to go to many of the races anymore, but occasionally he will fly down for races, and for sure he wanted to be there for the El Camino and had a great time with him.
Well, with all the success that Peter Redekop's had, he doesn't have a grade one stake win yet. And obviously, you know, thinking classics is one thing, but a grade one along the way here, I know would be treasured by him. This feels like the horse that can do that. You know, talk about what has gone on since last week, and I know between Steve Anderson and Brad Free and some other conversations, Jay Pridman, you know, you're monitoring where you might turn up for that, you know, big dirt opportunity.
Yeah, we're, you know, we decided, obviously, the race at Turfway, you know, that hit us right between the eye, but ultimately we really felt like okay, we just want to run him once more. He's had three route races. We didn't want to run him too many times, especially because we're going to ship to different places. So we decided, well, let's run him once more. And it made sense to put him on dirt the race before the Derby rather than just going in blind, because obviously that's a 20-horse field. You can get sloppy weather. And, you know, the break is a big, big thing in the Derby and the run to that first turn. So, you know, we felt like, okay, let's put him on the dirt. One reason is, you know, we got automatic bid to the Preakness. So if he doesn't run first or second in this next race and doesn't get in to the Derby, we got the Cal Derby at Golden Gate going a mile and an eighth for 100,000. It's a grade three race that we know right there will be, you know, probably the favorite in that race, and that'll springboard us right into the Preakness. So we didn't want to run him two times and forfeit that opportunity to put us in a bad position there. The ultimate goal is to get into a Triple Crown race, whether it be the Derby or the Preakness. And, you know, that's not going to be really my decision. That's going to be how the horse runs in his next race. So right now we're just watching him train, trying to keep him sound in the feed tub, and looking forward to our next start for sure.
Well, this is exciting, Blaine. I mean, as I mentioned, a lot of people excited for you. I mean, Hammer, when we were going into the weekend a week ago Friday, and you know, Rick wanted to make a point and really kind of stress, you know, what this horse might be, that, you know, had to be watched, and then when I fold in your part of it and what it would mean to, you know, be showcased like this, like a horse like this would be showcased, that got a lot of support as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a guy like me, it could be a story, kind of like, you know, whether we win or get there or whatnot. It's kind of like Mario Gutierrez. He come from the same, you know, same places that I come from. We run at Emerald. Washington's my home. I was raised on the backside of Long Acres, and now we're year-round at Golden Gate and in Seattle seasonal. You know, Seattle's still home for me. My wife and my daughter live there, so I come home every week and be a dad, and now we got our barn rolling here at Emerald Downs. Been racing horses at Hastings, and so you get in this situation, and we're all a small family between these three racetracks, and there's so many people pulling. You know, this just isn't our horse. This is everybody's horse. That's why it could be very, very special. And, you know, a guy thinks about that, you look back on it and go, man, you know, a lot of people, they live through this kind of a dream with us, and that's really special to me. So, you know, I appreciate all the phone calls and everybody's support, and we're going to do our darndest to make it there and represent good.
I love it. Well, we'll keep tabs, and we'll look forward to a decision. And no matter what, this is obviously a serious colt. And Scat Daddy, son out of the First Offense mare, clearly there's upside yet, and we're counting on Blaine to extract it. So we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Right on, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Blaine Wright, everybody. And one of the fun stories that is you always get on the Triple Crown Trail. And, you know, I kind of, it's funny, we're so Derby-centric. I kind of forgot that part of that El Camino situation gets you a free pass to the Preakness. And the Tessio will as well, when the Tessio up next on the road to Baltimore. So they do have some flexibility moving toward May. It's interesting. I mean, the fact that he's a big horse, that they want only run one more time. That's interesting too. All right. Excited for him. Another twist of fate. We're going to stay here. We only got about 8 minutes to round out the morning. And Mike Maloney reached out to Mike earlier, and he'll potentially join us tomorrow and let a professional gambler based in Kentucky talk about this story. And Frank Angst is going to join us instead for now. And Frank wrote the piece at Blood Horse that certainly got immediate attention and caused some immediate distress. And Kentucky tax law, as of January 1st, 2008, ended itemized deductions whereby players, horse players, could use losses against winnings. And obviously, this is a huge problem. And after, you know, all the advance that we've seen from the change in the withholding, this is a real hiccup and roadblock. Frank Angst joins us. Frank, just a few minutes this morning. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Give us how this even came to light, and because it certainly wasn't reported previously. It would have gotten the kind of attention that it elicited over the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I wish it had been something that I had noticed at the time. Obviously, there's plenty of racing, typical racing news to keep an eye on, that I'm not always looking at every tax law and in and out of tax law when it gets passed. But some of the players, so Ed DeRosa over at Twin Spires gave me a heads up that some players were concerned about what was going on there. So I was able to get a hold of some Kentucky players, one of which didn't want to go public, but I'm well aware of who he is, and who he says he is accurate. And he was willing to share his story, and just a guy who's always tried to do everything right and wanted to report what he owes to the state this year, and got a surprising message back from his accountant that some things had changed.
Then you dove into the specifics and give everybody the basic top line and the difference between previous and the way this rule was changed.
Kentucky, just like on the federal level, if you have gambling winnings, you can claim your losses up to the amount of those winnings. So say you have two or three tax tickets that are automatically reported, you can claim your losses if you keep track of those. And in the age of ADW, most people do. It's readily available, so you can claim those losses against the winnings. As most of us do know, there was a move at the federal level to try to simplify things on federal taxes, and it's up for a political debate if that was successful or not. But at any rate, they got rid of some deductions that you could claim, but they did keep in place the deduction, that you could claim your losses against the winnings on gambling. Kentucky did not put that provision in, so it just reads that if you can no longer do that. And I don't want to be too sweeping in what that means. I think we all kind of know. I mean, that's conceivably you could go to Keeneland and Churchill 10 times, basically come out maybe $1,000 in the red, but if in the process you won $3,000, technically you should be claiming that $3,000 in winnings. That's the way I was reading it, and I checked in with Chris Kaufman, who's done some excellent tax stories for us, and he confirmed that that's what it says, letter of the law. Hopefully there's some lawmakers that can address this issue and resolve it. Obviously, it's difficult because taxes have already been filed on some cases. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to reach out to some people today and have a story today or tomorrow about what's going to come of this, because it's as the horse player I quoted said, it's just unfair. I mean, it just doesn't ring as something that you shouldn't have to pay taxes for. And, of course, the parimutuel, it would apply to all gambling, but parimutuel especially are people that are really supporting the sport, and they're paying a lot of taxes, as we all know, through their gambling. So it's, it's not a good group to it's just not a very well-written law at all, I think.
Now, and clearly it slipped through, I imagine, people somebody like a Damon Thayer, I would have expected, who purports to be in tune with industry issues, and the fact that, you know, that this went through committee, because it had to have gone through some committees and whatever.
Yeah, I was going to make some effort to research the kind of the history of the of how that went through. I don't have any answers yet of who maybe should have been. I'm not prepared to say anything on that, but you would think that if you're going to put a sweeping new law like this in place, that people think about the ramifications, especially on an industry that's so important at Kentucky. So, but it's pretty frustrating along those lines.
Well,
that it ever even occurred.
We're going to get more from Mike Maloney tomorrow. And Mike, a Kentucky-based professional player, and, of course, the author of Betting with an Edge with Pete Fornatale. And so we'll get Mike's...
Mike may fall into a different category, and you'll have to ask him. But, I do know. I believe that he files as a professional player, so he might... I did talk with Mike on this story, and the theme is it just never ends. It's just for horse players, it's just so frustrating when we had such a significant step forward last year with the good work the NTRA did on the federal level, which has reduced the instances of reporting, but there still are some reporting and letter of the law. It's unclear even beyond that. So, but like I said, I don't want to fan any flames on that, but you know the way it reads, it's not good the way it reads.
No, we'll get more too. And you know, I did see on Twitter where somehow people expected that NTRA should have been somehow involved with this. This would not be this being a local a state circumstance. They wouldn't necessarily be plugged into that. I mean, they're operating on a national basis.
Their first concern is Washington. I'm sure if their expertise was called into a situation that they would lend it as best they could. But
I'll get some input from Keith Shamblin from Alex Waldrop too in advance of tomorrow, but I appreciate it. I did want to make sure that we started the week with people aware of this story before their accountants made them aware. So good job on the reporting, and we'll be following up with your follow-ups.
Yeah, and there's obviously there's some friends of the industry in Frankfort, the state capital here in Kentucky. Hopefully this gets addressed.
Yeah, and Mike, I will only hint that Mike Maloney in our exchange this morning said he expects that it will be fixed, but we'll report that as it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate it, Frank, and I will
You're welcome, Steve.
Talk soon, and for those of you who should be following, you absolutely should be following Frank, and does a terrific job, not just on the... on the business side, but he can punch up a ticket worth betting along with as well. BH_FAngst, A-N-G-S-T. It's not Frank that's causing the angst, the horse players. It's Frankfort. I appreciate Frank's visit. And Blaine Wright, Johnny D, and Johnny White ran through a lot here in these 3 hours. Back tomorrow with you at 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay 6 o'clock. Here on SiriusXM and at the website in a little bit. You can podcast and stream, etc., and archive. And we'll talk to you in the morning. Very limited racing today. If I'm not mistaken, I think we're only looking at, Philly. We got Parks and Mahoning, I know, and Louisiana Downs. There you go. And Turf Paradise. So, four wagering options. Good luck if you're playing. Talk to you in the morning.
Go killing all the bees.
Hey-oh!
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.